You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight we have Ken.
Amito.
And Mike.
Hey.
So yeah, this is episode 45, which is our, so entitled, The Jet Li Special. Awesome.
Woo!
Sorry, I actually put myself in the mind of the listener there. Oh, they got to talk about Jet Li.
maybe we should, for background music during this build up, you should have some AC/DC tune. Panda. Then you can build it up.
Aye,
it's
there
the Jet Li special. but we won't do that.
We've got the man here. Wait, no, you don't.
You have one of the Jet Li copies. I think there's one. Because they made this movie Fist of Legend 2, where they have Jet Li with three E's or whatever, but it's a Jet Li copy.
And the thing is, he fought Bolo.
Oh, really?
Bolo was in that film.
A 20-year-old flick that they... Well, it's the cut and paste thing, so it's a new footage of some Guaylos and old footage of stuff.
Oh.
I guess.
I actually thought it was an entirely new film, and Bolo probably had financial problems.
I don't know how old exactly, but it was a cut and paste thing. Taking a look at it, but it's Fist of Legends 2, I think, even. So it's only Fist of Legends.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those Wu-Tang DVDs that's out in the States, mm-hmm. Maybe in the UK as well.
Aye.
Wu-Tang DVD.
The lead actor looks like a 15-year-old. With curtains. Right, so on with the show. last Jet Li movies watched. What about you, Mike?
Well, I watched Shaolin Temple.
Fucking hell, I did as well.
Yeah. Dual review.
Well, I hadn't actually seen it before. So it wasn't a rewatch or anything. It was a first-timer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Jet Li's first film.
Yep.
From 1982,
I think he would have been about 19.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of South Shaolin Master. The awesome mainland China old school kung fu film. They've got quite a bit of similarities between them.
I saw that recently as well.
Yeah. A lot of kind of the wushu trained people in it. Loads of people who can fight. Almost everybody can do something. Quite flowery choreography. But also a bit like a South Shaolin Master, a little bit of the kind of Hong Kong choreography in there. It's not just a wushu demonstration. Nice bit of gymnasticalness and weapons and the wushu, but also a bit of hard-hitting beef. Also, a little fact as well, is the woman co-starring in it was Jet Li's first wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now married to Nina Lee, a lucky bastard.
Got two kids in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can see Jet's kind of, charm and he's got a bit of charisma about him. You can understand why he was selected to be a kind of a starry actor. But he did have to work quite hard and have to really use that kind of, the winning smile and everything after he suffocated a dog early on in the film. And then
I don't believe that's real, though, but there's animal cruelty in the film that is real, but it's not dogs.
Yeah. So he suffocates a dog, a perfectly well-meaning, nice Alsatian. But then the worst bit is...
So he put out of his misery.
Well,
tried to hide from his master, and he was faking being asleep, but he laid on top of the dog. So,
Alright, I thought it was like the dog was returning sex. Here, boy, wait, wait, down, down, shh, go to sleep, go to sleep.
Well, it could have happened too, because Hong Kong movies are like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he asphyxiates a dog. And then I'm thinking, yeah, I'm kind of slightly against you now, Jet. That was a bit unnecessary. But then he goes to bury it, and you think, okay, he's remorseful. He's buried the dog, nice. That's a nice act. But then he shows, about, like, 2 minutes later, the owner of the dog, the fur that he obviously skinned off the dog. So he killed the dog, skinned it, then buried it. So now he's got a bit of a mountain to climb to get me back on his side. Mm-hmm. After that, and he does his best. He's still a bit of a douche, actually, all through the film. He's a pretty shit Buddhist monk. But yeah, I mean, it's not a lot to say about it, really. I mean, it's a nice kind of mainlandy kung fu film with lots of good choreo. Jet Li looks nice and spry, nice kicks and little flips and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of really nice weapon work and a few little demonstrations. I mean, there's one section which is just a kind of here's what Jet can do showcase, yeah. Where it just has him in a few different sets with a few different costumes, throwing a few different weapons around.
Different seasons as well, so he's doing it in snow in this very obviously indoor sets, which I find totally charming. It's one of my favorite sequences in the film. This 2-3 minute showcase of him. Apparently moving that fast, but I don't know how fast actual wushu performers can move, so I don't know if that footage is manipulated in terms of film speeds, but
it looked fairly realistic to me. Well, it wasn't Donnie Yen or anything.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I mean, I haven't, you know, I watch a lot of kung fu films, so it's a good kung fu film. It's got some nice stuff in it, but it hasn't got anything that, you know, would blow me away. Apart from the fact that, you know, it's a young Jet Li and stuff. So I don't know if you've got any more... What thoughts you've got on it, Ken?
Oh, Jet. I'm Jet for this podcast. I kind of agree, actually. It could have been dangerously close to that wushu demo and nothing else. But they make it, you know, they make a standard kung fu story template out of this. Obviously, Jet Li wants revenge on evil, whatever dynasty, general... this guy using Y Place, the guy with the beard, he appears in all three Shaolin Temple films and also in a few other mainland shot Chinese martial arts films like Yellow River Fighter. But anyway, in between, I actually, when rewatching it, because I watched it eons ago and watched it for the first time now, I realized that I connected for once quite well to the you know, the underlying message of, you know, Buddhism versus, you know, driven revenge, and, you know, how you find that balance, because Jet Li's character is, you know, drawn both ways. He wants to become a good Buddhist monk, but also wants to, you know, have his way with the evil general, that's a basic message and not revolutionary in any way, but for this movie I kind of I thought they pulled that off well, which was not then therefore filler in between all the fight scenes. There actually was some bearable stuff in between. I also liked the master student relationship between Jet Li's master and him. The actor playing his master, I believe he was called, I don't have the name in front of me now, but I think he displayed that warmth that was needed, because he was also a monk that looked at, you know, the definition of being a good Buddhist, what is that? And obviously in the end, it means that they have to fight back, you know, in this case. You know, it's an excuse for bloodshed. Apparently this story is... as many other stories of Shaolin Temple, it's a bit difficult to know how true some of this folklore and myth is, but apparently this story is centered around what created like the defensive force of Shaolin Temple and Shaolin Temple martial arts and stuff like that. So it tries to take a little page out of history, or rather folklore or myth, But again, it's not a boring history lesson as such. It's, they basically say at the end of the film a little text code about what subsequently happened in Shaolin Temple and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I wasn't as involved in, I mean, as Mike said, there's some wonderful wushu performers on screen, and they, especially when they have weapons, they move incredibly well, and they look the best when they have weapons. But whenever they go hand-to-hand combat, it's a lot of that during the ending. I kind of tuned out. I tried to sort of desperately get into it, but I thought that was one part of the choreo that didn't work. But whenever they had weapons fights, I thought this was as mesmerizing as anything, considering that what I read was that they didn't want to employ any Hong Kong choreographers. They basically used the senior trainers of the wushu team, supposedly the Beijing wushu team. And seeing as they had no experience, seemingly, I mean, I think that they do very well, but there's a few times where it lacks the flair as such. I tuned out a bit, but overall, it's a good film and an important film, obviously, because it broke Jet Li big time. I mean, the effect this had, which is kind of akin to, you know, Remember Better Tomorrow, the effect that had, everybody wanted to be Jiang Fat.
Mm-hmm.
This apparently made everyone want to go to Shaolin Temple and learn Kung Fu, which was not necessarily what Shaolin Temple was about as such. So it, kind of a reverse effect overall, and it became a big tourist attraction as well, and they really played up the Kung Fu aspect as years went on for the tourists and stuff. So the pure definition of what the Shaolin Temple was about is not as known today, but it didn't hurt that the movie made money, because it apparently afforded some restoration that they could do to the Shaolin Temple. It wasn't in the best of shape, so you know, overall, mm-hmm. I'm sure they don't regret it. And also, one important aspect is that it's apparently the first Kung Fu movie shot inside communist China, mainland communist China, but it was during a time of change. Obviously, the Cultural Revolution had passed and the new political changes were taking place. So now they could go into China and enlist these, you know, great performers that they obviously knew of, the Hong Kong production company knew of. So it all worked out very well for everyone. And Jet Li is also, he makes an imprint. I think he has that hatred and naive sense in him, the character, and he's also very fast moving and agile. And you know, as Mike said, it's easy to see why he was chosen as lead.
Mm-hmm.
And was also a former wushu champion at this point, so he was known, very known.
All right.
And you've not seen this, too?
No, I've not seen any of his Shaw Brothers films.
Well, The Martial Arts of Shaolin, which is kind of the third unrelated sequel. The second was unrelated as well, Kids from Shaolin,
yeah.
Which I'm watching right now, and it's a fucking terrible film. really unbearable. You know, Kids from Shaolin, and you can draw your own conclusion of that.
Mm-hmm.
But Martial Arts of Shaolin, it goes back to the roots of the first one, basically. It's the same cast, basically, and it's a good film. And rare chance to see Lau Galung direct Jet Li and wushu performance, so it's a very good film.
Alright, I'll...
And Jet Li dresses up as a sheep.
Hi.
You sure he's not just wearing the dog skin? Fur.
Could be.
He's in drag in the second one.
Oh, dear lord. I guess everyone needs to take a couple bullets before they get to make the good movie. Yeah.
So, what did you watch then, Stuart?
well, for me,
I watched Dragon Tiger Gate again. I know it's not Jet Li, but I still watched it.
You bastards.
did it actually come off your ban list this time?
okay, right. Weeshed. Two of them did. Because I chose to watch the Jet Li films that were on the ban list. Although I never had time to watch all of them, but I did watch The Forbidden Kingdom.
Nice one.
And War. Ah, oh, good, no one's singing. Right. I was really waiting for the moment, but it didn't happen. Thank God. So, The Forbidden Kingdom. I've spoke about this one before when I went to the pictures to see it, but yeah, it's still a fucking great film. Like, that is the ideal... Like, the film that put Jackie Chan and Jet Li together, I couldn't ask for anything better than this film. So...
And it's one of those beforehand, you know, drool-inducing things that actually came true. It lived up to
exactly
the promise. Apparently, I haven't seen it, but you know, everyone's raving about this. So it...
Mm-hmm. And when after watching the movie, I then went on to watch the making of, and the director definitely kind of knew what he wanted to do, or should I say the actual the person who wrote the film, but. They're basically thinking it in a way, it's like, who do you want, it's like, say this is you in the movie, it's like, who would you want to be your teachers? It's like, Jackie Chan and Jet Li. Who would you want to be, who would want to choreograph the action in your movie? Yin Wu Ping. It's like, who would want to make this film look magnificent? Who wants to make this movie look really, really good? So they got Peter Powell to come in as well. So, yeah, it's definitely got all the elements of the perfect kung fu movie. Let's see, for those not familiar with the story, American teenager Jason, played by Michael Agnaro, he's not Japanese, just can't pronounce shit, who is obsessed with kung fu cinema and kung fu classics. He finds an antique Chinese staff in a pawn shop, the legendary stick weapon of the... IMDb. Basically, the legendary stick is actually the staff of the Monkey King. And with the lost relic in his hands, Jason finds himself being transported back into ancient China, there where he meets drunken kung fu master Lu Yan, played by Jackie Chan, and an enigmatic, what the fuck, and skillful silent monk, played by Jet Li, and a vengeance-bent kung fu... Kung fu? Aye, sure, it's fucking confused. Aye, so... A fucking band of heroes go together to fight the evil Jade Warlord Colin Chow and free the Monkey King, played by Jet Li. Dual roles. Yeah, Stuart saved it. Let's see, any notable names there? Let's see, there's Lee.
Who's watching TV in the background?
Mike, come on.
Turn off the fucking.
Turn off the TV, man! We're committed to this podcast. No, you heard me on the phone. You heard me on the phone. I told that bitch. So what?
No one.
Forget it. Right, so other notable actors in Forbidden Kingdom include Crystal Liu, who plays the Golden Sparrow, and Li Bingbing.
What is that noise in the background?
Fuck off.
Is your TV coming on by itself, Mike?
It's not my TV, it's a computer. Keeps shouting at me.
Watch football, watch football.
It's fucking shouting results at you. They scored.
Andy Gray.
There we go.
Liverpool, Barcelona, 3-1.
John, it's also it, let's roll.
Yeah, so, Fuck, no, I just got confused there, realising there's someone else in the cast list for Forbidden Kingdom who has Jackie Chan's credits as both his characters. So I'm guessing it must have been a stunt double. Well, I just got put off. Like, the role of Jackie Chan was played by Jason Chong. Like, what? I wasn't Jackie?
It was not right. It was not him in the old guy makeup. That was Jackie.
Yeah, that was Jackie as well. But... supposedly, it was Jason Chong. A little bit worried there, Jackie. You better watch your back. So, yeah, the other film on my list, which I watched, was War. The 2007 triad, Yakuza, Jason Statham action vehicle. So the plot to this one was Jack Crawford, aka Jason Statham, is an FBI agent who discovers that a hitman named Rogue, Jet Li, is back in San Francisco after 3 years of complete disappearance by Rogue's trademark titanium shells with depleted uranium slugs. Yes, there's that much attention paid to bloody bullets. And yeah, Crawford knew that Rogue, from his past experience, that Rogue, killed Crawford's partner, Tom Lone, played by Terry Chen, who? Yes, exactly. And his wife and daughter, and set their home on fire. Crawford wants justice for his partner and vows to kill Rogue to get even. This Saturday night, only $5.99. So
he's a burnt out cop with a
yeah. Jet Li's an assassin when we got shot in the bus.
Sounds really generic. I don't want to watch that film based on that description, IMDb's description.
Yeah, well, saying that, I went for the plot summary and it is 8 paragraphs long. So I'll cut it down for you. I'll cut it down to a paragraph and a sentence. So, yeah, this was a surprisingly good film for me because just Jet Li pulls off the evil, cold-ass, like, assassin role surprisingly well. Like, when it comes to the scenes where he's basically taken out, like, the enemy Yakuzas, this cunt's just fucking cold. No remorse for anyone he's killing.
Banned in China, right?
Was it?
I think so.
Probably.
I remember reading Jet having a moan about, you know, because if you've got a character that's evil, a Chinese character, then the government tends to ban it. Pirates of the Caribbean 3 had a Chow Yun Fat as a pirate, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They banned that.
And Danny the Dog poster art wasn't that popular in China either.
No. So, Stu, what I want to know about War, aka Rogue Assassin. Well, actually, I got a question for the makers. Why do they give it such a shite title like War? What's wrong with Rogue Assassin?
Yeah.
Secondly, question to you, Stu. Do Jet Li and the Stace get it on? In a fighty way?
I thought you meant they're going to cuddle and make out, but no, that scene didn't happen. Yes, at the end, like, sledgehammers swing, kicks fly, shit goes down.
Good.
And what is that the extent of the fight action, or...?
No, there's all the... They don't actually fight till the very end of the film, but all before it is, like, when Jet Li's attacking different groups, like, he's attacking the Triads and the Yakuzas. So there's a lot of scenes, well, a lot of action scenes, not memorably fighting scenes, but, like, sword fights, Jet Li jabbing people up, setting, putting, actually, strangely enough, another theme here, killing dogs. Because there's a point where he's going to, like, basically planning a hit on the Yakuza, and the two guard dogs pick up on Jet being there, so they run out into the corridor, hear one dog being killed off, and then the other one just kind of walks back to the gangs, and the Golden's like, just sort of patting the head, making sure it's alright, and realising there's, like, explosives on its collar.
Nice.
Yeah, I think there's a subtle theme here. I'm going to have to rewatch all the other Jet Li films, look for, like, dog cruelty. Right, no, I'm getting caught up in that now. Right, so, yeah, good film. Okay, so, I think that's our movies covered. Mike, you want to initiate the countdown?
Yeah, let's initiate the countdown, Stuart.
Okay, this is where we cue Europe. So, basically, we done a survey a few months ago where, hopefully you'll remember, where we're basically asking you, what is your favourite Jet Li movies? And we begged and we clawed at you to give us your answers until we had 100 answers. Yep.
Because that's what we're like.
I got banned from a lot of forums.
including Podcast on Fire forum, strangely enough.
Yeah, so basically Mike's going to run down the list of the top 10 all-time favourite Jet Li films. as voted by you, the public. Or unless you're a member of our forum, which can't be the now because of some spam attacks. But yeah, if you are a member of our forum, you'll get the uncut 15 countdown. So Mike, starting in at number 10, what we got?
Start the music, Stu.
Ta-da.
Number 10, The Forbidden Kingdom.
What? Well, aye. That film is good.
Already spoken about it.
Yep.
Number 9, My Father is a Hero.
That was a fun film.
AKA, is that the one that's called The Enforcer or something like that?
The Enforcer, yeah. That's just been released by Dragon Dynasty, I think.
Yeah.
That AKA, film. Also, because the title in the Hong Kong print is the more grammatically incorrect, My Father is Hero, which I reviewed it, which was the title I used for my review, just to be specific.
Didn't like that film. Thought it was pretty boring. Number 8. Hitman.
That was a boring film.
See, I quite like Hitman. I'm surprised that it's scored so highly in the Jet Li favourites, though.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly. It's not too fighty.
No.
Although Jet Li doesn't do one awesome kick in it.
Hmm.
It's kind of known for being the first movie where Jet Li, at least attempted sing sound Cantonese.
Hmm.
So, because I don't think he's quite comfy speaking Cantonese, but that was one film where you could hear him. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jen says he's got a bit of an accent. 7. Okay. Shaolin Temple. Which obviously we've already spoke about as well.
Mm-hmm.
Building sheep killings at number 7.
How far am I going with this list, Stu?
Well, that's it. We're going to have a little break now.
Nice.
Because it's echoey as fuck.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. So, are we calling this an official piss break?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, welcome back. Yes, so, for the people that aren't really clued up with Jet Li, this is your history lesson. Get ready for it. Li Lingzhi, born April 26, 1963, better known as his stage name Jet Li, is a Chinese martial artist, actor, wushu champion, and international film star. After 3 years of intensive training with Wu Bin, Li won his first national championship from the Beijing wushu team. After retiring from wushu at the age of 17, he went on to win great acclaim in China as an actor, making his debut with the film Shaolin Temple, as we've mentioned. He went on to star in many critically acclaimed martial art epics films, most notably the Once Upon a Time in China series, where he portrayed the folk hero Wong Fei-hung. His first role in an American film was as a villain, which was Lethal Weapon 4. His first Hollywood leading role was in Romeo Must Die. Mike's response?
That was my response.
And now I want Mike's reply.
Hey, Romeo Must Die, alright?
Alright. I was waiting for a boo, yeah, but never got it. You got the wrong one.
Yeah, exactly. Good, Mike, you're turning around.
Yay!
I'm decisive.
Aye, that is a sentence.
Boo!
Is this me getting booed off? Come on, I've stopped playing Guitar Hero. Right, he has gone on to star in many Hollywood action films, most recently starring alongside Jackie Chan in The Forbidden Kingdom, and as the villain in The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. Outside of movies, Jet Li is heavily involved with charity. In April 2007, touched by his near-death experience in the Maldives during the 2004 tsunami, Li formed his own non-profit foundation called The One Foundation. The One Foundation supports international disaster relief and efforts in conjunction with the Red Cross as well as other efforts. And I think nowadays that's what you see him doing a lot of his work on. When there's videos and interviews, it's always him promoting his foundation.
that's a pretty harrowing story, the way he tells it. You know, one of his children were swept away, but he or she was picked up by someone else, so he didn't lose any children in the tsunami, but that's a pretty harrowing image he paints. Holding one of his children over his head, you know, while the other one goes away in the water. Mm-hmm. So, good on him.
Yeah. And with, well, basically, let's see, trying to think, because basically that is my history on Jet Li, so when it comes to factoids, feel free to throw any in, but the last one I remembered was researching this morning about the One Foundation and how, let's see, the amount of volunteers. He's had plenty of celebrity volunteers throughout his organisation. Let's see, we've had the likes of Andy Lau, Michelle Yao, Yurong Guang, Li Bingbing, and Yao Ming have all been notable volunteers throughout his charity.
Yao Ming, is that the basketball player?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember them doing a lot of promotion for it between him and Jackie during Forbidden Kingdoms. Like, whenever they've been interviewed, they're wearing his t-shirts. Or you see him doing, because he's got like a Facebook page set up, which actually just recently has become very, very active. Mm. You keep noticing it in sort of like your highlights, and you see comments, and it's like 1,200. It's like, dude. And it's just basically him talking about like the One Foundation. This is definitely something really, really true to his heart. I was going to say something really personal, but the dude's got his head on straight. Heck, I think he was even on the front cover of Time magazine for his charity efforts as well.
Well, certainly this far into his career, he doesn't need the dough to support himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he can be selective with movies and dedicate himself to this in a way that still means every now and again a movie comes out. One every year probably frees up room to work with your desired charity.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, anyway.
Yeah, I wonder what the rest of the cast of Cradle to the Grave are doing nowadays.
Well, the director with that name that no one can pronounce, he still makes, what is it, he made Doom as well.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Well, we'll get...
I think BMX we'll get to him. Might be in jail.
Really?
Think so.
Who cares?
Hope so.
Well, that's the kind of thing. If we focus on like the Hollywood career, do you think he got into a contract with the likes of Joel Silver and, you know, basically had to perform his duty as a contract player by appearing in the likes of Roman Must Die? Okay, that was his first lead, but, you know, Cradle to the Grave and movies like that, you know, where they pair him up with, in this case, a rapper. Again, that lame concept of black people and kung fu, that still is apparently a concept that, well, it makes money. I think Cradle to the Grave was a fairly successful film, but, you know, it's not really a Jet as you want to see him, you know, that pairing up with actors. It's not really something I want to see him do.
Stephen Chow was really looking in the wrong direction when trying to make Kung Fu popular by using football. He should have used black people.
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, the thing is, that goes from the 70s, wasn't it? And the grindhouse cinemas and stuff, Kung Fu was really popular amongst a lot of the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, I don't know how popular it still is with the black community. I mean,
maybe
it was suggested
Tony
Jaa's
bringing it back.
They, you know, Romeo Must Die, with the leer and stuff, and the hip-hop and rap that they had in that, and then Cradle to the Grave and all that.
It seems like studios think it still is a concept, a wave to ride, but in fact it's diminished quite a bit, so they... I don't know if they have stopped doing it. I guess there's no Asian stars currently to pair the likes of DMX up with, but... I don't know. I guess you're going to see a movie with Lil Wayne and someone in the future.
Yeah, I was expecting Chow Yun-Fat and Wayne Brothers. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Couldn't
Wayne Brothers. Well, Wayne Brothers is a different beast altogether.
You know why you shouldn't have said that, Stu? Because probably one of the Wayans or Chow Yun-Fat might be listening and go, oh, hey, that's a good idea.
Ah! Yep, some movie producer's just listening to this and he's sitting phoning it out now.
Let's type up our latest spoof movie. You know.
Chinese movie.
Yeah. Well, the ultimate retarded level this mixture between martial arts and the black community reached was this this like half hour show. Was it Kung Fu, combining old timey clips with like cool graphics and cool, you know, gangster dubbing. And that went, that was a series. That was just not a 5 minute like fucking SNL skit. That was a series, and that was just mind blowingly tedious. But people seem to love that.
That show pissed me off so much, but my friends would love to make me watch it just to see how I'd react. I'd be the guy squirming in the corner, like vomiting blood. And then they put the volume up.
Was it as retarded as that crud with Steve Odekirk?
But
Kung Pao into the horse crap.
Yeah.
Face first, aye.
Yeah, and also, what was it? They dubbed the Korean movie Volcano High with
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg and like the guys from other hip hop stars, but
man, I need to troll YouTube to find sample videos of that. That's gonna be bad.
So, I mean, I can understand why it was a hot commodity back then, as Mike described. That was, you know, a combination that sort of happened, and the viewers were, you know, of the black community and stuff like that. And even when the Wu-Tang Clan started using samples and stage names referring to old Hong Kong movies, I don't think that was, you know, a retarded level necessarily, because I think Wu-Tang Clan, like the RZA, he genuinely loves the movies. He knows a fair amount of them and stuff like that. So it was not a let's cash in on kind of thing.
Well, he said on the commentary for 36 Chamber that him and ODB used to watch them all the time, and they loved the kind of the camaraderie, the brothership, the kind of we're in this together till death kind of, and a lot of always a lot of stuff in Kung Fu movies about people being oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Usually by the Chings, damn Ching bastards. And so they kind of identified with that kind of stuff. And also had awesome ass kicking it.
Alright, and one of the things I noticed from the Jet Li documentary, there was the fact for Cradle in the Grave, which is I found was actually quite a fun fact, that Jet Li turned to his website and got the public to vote who should be the villain of the movie. And the vast majority chose Mark Dacascos.
Well, pretty good choice. I don't know if he was very well showcased in that movie, because by then, I really tuned out.
Yeah, I think there's something to do with like radiation or nuclear or something. I just have this vivid shot of like green light flashing out his eyes as he died.
I don't even remember Mark Dacascos being in it.
Yeah, there you go.
He was basically the guy that done a couple of lines in the first bit of the movie. Everybody else was doing their thing. He's like, he just stood there and went, go do it. Then he disappeared to the end, ready to fight.
Was it Kelly Hu as well? Was fighting beside him. The only good part about Cradle to the Grave is Tom Arnold and Anthony Anderson ad-libbing during the end credits.
Aye.
Which was the only funny bit, because they distanced themselves from the movie and genuinely had fun with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, forgetting about the fact that they were in a movie with a two in it. A two replacing a word.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
See, poor old Mark Dacascos. We should do a show
on poor old Mark the Cat's cost.
Yeah. Probably needs the publicity, but I mean...
Try and call him on.
On people who probably should have been more popular and successful than they have been.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be worthwhile, sure. I'd definitely have to talk about it. We have to talk about Mark in that one.
But that's Jet's American career that is bad. You know, the part of his career that works is not really purely American. Because the best movie, English language movie, he made, for my money's worth, is...
Wait, hold it.
Sorry?
Next segment of our show, favourite Jet Li movies.
There you go.
Okay, continue, Ken.
Danny the Dog, a.k.a. Unleashed. But I do like Danny the Dog title much more.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an awesome film. And made basically a European movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it took some distance from Hollywood for a script like that to be made, because even though it combines, you know, ass kicking and drama, I don't think it would have been I don't think it would have been as good, basically. And the Luc Besson team of people pull that off immensely well. I love that film, and it's really touching. And Jet shows he's a good actor, which is basically the character of his that I'm more that I look forward to seeing most of the time. Jet Li the actor, you know, I think he's a good action performer, but I think, you know, the moments where he shines as an actor is much more worth it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember that one quite well, where it was set in Glasgow. Well, supposedly.
Wasn't shot in Scotland as well?
There was one, I think there was one part where they went to like a David Sands, which is like a local brand of shop.
Look, we're in Scotland now.
I think they filmed there for a day, then probably went to France and filmed the rest.
Yeah. Don't remember many Scottish accents in it.
I think they were just the woman in the shop. That was it.
Bob was doing his Cockney gangster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was still good.
And Morgan Freeman was being Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can't fault him for that.
Well, it's hard to criticise him.
You're Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Don't be.
Well, I remember when clips first surfaced off, like the scene where Jet Li eats ice cream for the first time.
Yeah.
People were really annoyed, I think. I really thought that was a retarded scene and stuff like that, and didn't like seeing Jet in that way. Kind of probably came a bit from the camp that only wants to see him kick ass, but obviously out of context, that scene might not feel very valid, but it obviously is.
But then I think it was like quickly whipped around when the opening fight scene got leaked online as well.
Oh, really?
Because I do remember the ice cream scene first. And that was a nice scene to me. I thought it just... I reckon that's the scene that gives you the warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah.
Then in the next scene, Jet Li's headbutting the fuck off some guy.
Yeah. But it's that kind of mixture that sounds really lame on paper, but I think they pull it off really well. And The most adorable image out of Danny the Dog is him in the boat with his life saving jacket on.
Yes.
I think that's totally adorable, and that's how Jet plays it, obviously. And I think he deserves a whole lot of credit for that. And so, you know, Forbidden Kingdom thankfully was a standout in that regard, an American produced movie that that utilized him. Not as a dramatic actor, obviously, or was the drama in that film? Before I jump in,
There wasn't much drama to it. It was just more story driven.
Right. So, and to quickly whip back to the Hong Kong side. Again, I like Jet Li the actor more. That's the most impression I sort of get from him when I'm thinking about Jet Li. I'm thinking about the actor, and Once Upon a Time in China 2 for me, because I think it's a great sequel,
which is officially not as good as Romeo Must Die.
I would agree on that. I can't argue against the list, though, can I?
You can't.
The list says it all. But,
the list knows all.
Yeah, I guess. Numbers and words mean everything. But Once Upon a Time in China 2, I think it's great because it continues on, obviously being a sequel, but it continues on the sort of great parts underneath the great action, which is the continuing story between Jet Li and Rosamund Kwan's characters. With her obviously being in love with him, and him not, this is not spoiling it really, but he realizes that more during the sequel, and then there's a moment in it where it's one of the most well played like moments out of Jet Li's career, where it's a moment of realization where he doesn't say anything. He's just in the looks, and later on in that scene he continues to kick ass. So I mean, it's a good mixture and a really good movie, and that trilogy of movies really. After the third one, things went downhill, not just because Jet left, but they really didn't have much left in the tank story-wise for that series of films.
Alright. Any other notable favourites?
Not as such, no. I'm keen to hear yours.
Alright, for me, let's see. Actually, the very first Jet Li film I've ever seen was more in the way of the very first Hong Kong film I've ever seen properly when I started collecting, was Once Upon a Time in China 3.
Straight on to 3.
Yeah, it was like a random Christmas present from my girlfriend's dad. Like, he knew I was getting into, like, Asian cinema, so he just must have walked into HMV, saw Jet Li, picked it up.
And bought the third film in the series.
Yeah. I think he thought nothing of it. He just saw it.
Bet it was
up.
On sale.
It may have
he
been.
He thought, oh, I'll get one to £20. What the heck?
Aye, exactly.
Hang on, this one's £2.50.
I still think it would probably be £20, because that was the time where we had to pay that price for DVDs.
Back in the old days.
I was happy to buy Mr. Vampire and Eastern Condors when they're half price, £10 each. Man, nowadays, you would expect to get a Blu-ray for £10.
Yeah, I think I can't. The only DVD I bought brand new, like out of a British shop for that much, well, I didn't get it out of a shop, but was Dragons Forever for like £15 for the platinum double disc. Never done it otherwise. Always feels like a rip-off, because you know, just a few months later, it's gonna be on sale.
So, some of my notable favourites always seem to be some of the first ones I've came across. So, one of my more favourite, I wouldn't say American ones, it would be Kiss of the Dragon. So, that doesn't really classify as an American film, does it, really?
It's a European again, it's a little song camp again.
And I thought that film was fucking good. Like, the fight scenes in that film, like the scenes in the dojo, and then against the two big bleached blonde blokes. The one that went on to star in the Parkour movie as well.
Cyril Raffaelli, I think is something like that.
Yeah, call him that if you want.
That's like a porn name.
And the other effort, which was The One. I think there's just something about Jet Li fighting Jet Li was great.
And like there's what was his line? I'm no one's bitch.
Aye, like the badass Jet Li was brilliant, and nobody's my bitch. Something like that. You are mine. And then he fought like on top of a pyramid.
Yeah, only good moment out of that film, and the only good moment out of Kiss of the Dragon was the dojo fight. Otherwise, not for me.
And I always. There's a thing between me and my friend when we first watched The One. We both actually believed Jason Statham's character was actually called Fudge.
What was he called now?
What was it? it was just something that said they really just like Fudge. And like, I think, you know, we're waiting for the joke to be revealed, but it never happens.
Fudge pucker.
It was that Delroy Lindo who, like, called him. It was the way he pronounced him. Possibly he said fun, like fudge. But it's Jason Statham's credited as MVA agent Evan Funsk.
Funsk. Where do they come up with these names?
Where he's lying against the wall, slowly dying. He's like, you go get them, fudge.
Yeah, well, that kind of perhaps cemented the fun factor needed for that film. At least for you, because I wasn't keen on that either.
And I did love the fact that now there's all these other beings in the world, and we're going through the list of different Jet Lis, and they came up with the Swedish Jet Li, where he had the little blonde wig on.
Hello, I'm eating meatballs!
I was pretty sure he was wearing a shell suit as well. It looked priceless.
I drive a Volvo.
And I mean, how, like, you have to go into better things from this movie, because, like, it was directed by James Wong.
Hail Wong!
Yeah, director of Dragon Ball. Yes.
That has officially
that just made Mark listen valid
quickly. That is okay. Gone.
So I think the one was James Wong's only saving grace, silver lining in his career. Yeah. That and that one episode of the X-Files.
Why, fucking hell, he wrote a lot of episodes of the X-Files, but he did do the first Final Destination movie, which I've heard good things about, so you know. Mm-hmm.
And the third one.
Oh, really? Okay.
He came back for more. So, other than that, back to his Hong Kong efforts, there's The Warlords, Fearless. Fearless was a fucking good movie.
Yeah.
Fucking good movie.
Jet Li, the actor again.
Mm-hmm.
Being a total dick for, like, first half of the movie, which I really enjoyed.
And, like, the fight scenes in that movie were brilliant as well. It was really well done. And I always like to think in the way that it's sort of an unintentional series of films where he plays the character of Ho Yun Jai at the end of the film. I'm not going to say it. That happens. And then you can watch Fist of Legend, where there's Jet Li playing the student of Ho Yun Jai.
Yeah? Yeah. It's a connection. And then backwards one, but in timeline.
It's like a younger version of Ho Yun Jai, with hair.
Amazing.
That was fun while it lasted.
Amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to marvel over my illustrious movie facts.
There's a section on game trailers called the Video Game Vault, which is like these 2-minute videos about the old-timey games. And at times that guy has a little jingle in the middle of the videos where he says, you know, whatever his name is, useless knowledge, you know, a little jingle. So maybe you should edit that in. Stuart useless knowledge.
Right, thanks for pointing that out.
But useless knowledge is fun.
That shit hurts, man. Yeah. Nah, let's see, other notable favourites. Tai Chi Master. Had a lot of fun with that film. That was with the Hong Kong version, you got to see more of the sillier side of Jet Li, where basically when his character went crazy and he believed he was a Chinese vampire. Or when him and his Kung Fu brother were, I think Chin Tu Ho, were sleeping on their heads. Like doing headstands? It was like handstands without the hands.
Yeah, kind of waifu period there was.
Yeah,
was
very waifu.
Was many like reference movies that people reference are from this waifu period, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Tai Chi Master being free.
Mm-hmm. And other than that, Black Mask, as that was one of my other first Jet Li films. Because I was basically got to the point when I started collecting Hong Kong cinema movies in the UK. Fucking hiccups. In the UK. and like when you're trawling through the cash generators, the secondhand DVD stores, there was this straight, like this cheap UK DVD release of Black Mass when it was dubbed in English.
And it had a rap hip hop soundtrack added to it as well.
Thankfully not.
Oh really? So it was a different English version, because at least the American version of When Into Cinemas had a redone score with more techno hip hop rap, if you will.
Saying that, maybe I've not. Well, I've not seen it in probably 3 or 4 years.
So like Black Mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they did re score it and stuff for US release.
Probably the UK.
Maybe UK was, I think it was an original.
I mean, I think it was different from the UK version because it got a theatrical run in America, which it didn't in the UK.
And that's where they had Sean Lau's character. Wait, Sean Lau? Lau Ching Wan as The Rock. Because yeah, he was just this hard cop.
Slightly different edit of the film. More of the violence in the British version, but some of the other story bits are chopped out.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, I always think of it as Jet Li versus Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, where he plays, fights this guy called Patrick Long.
Mm-hmm. Where he has the long black hair and the stained glasses.
It's a bit more, it moves better than Ozzy Osbourne does.
Aye. That would have been a really easy fight. Just boom. Runs or jump kick. Victory! Takes away his walking stick.
Finish him.
So, what about you, Mike? Favourite Jet Li films?
I think you've just done all Jet Li filmography there. Actually, the thing is, I like Jet. He's obviously like a very talented master artist. And I think he's got a bit about him as an actor. And he's a pretty endearing screen presence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of problems I think I have is, one, not totally convinced when he's trying to act like a badass. I'm not sure he's 100% convincing like that. Secondly, he was really popular in a period of kind of martial arts films that I'm not actually a massive fan of, which is kind of the mid-90s new wave. Which, as you've said, it's a lot of wire action, a lot of undercranking. The action and stuff, and it all feels very light and floaty. It's not as grounded or as powerful as I prefer kind of films. Having said that, there are some I really like. Fist of Legend.
Yep.
Obviously, is a classic. Still a little bit too much wiriness for my liking. And the best fight in the film actually doesn't involve Jet Li, but involves Chin Su Ho defending the school. And another problem with that film, actually, it's not really the problem with the film, but it kind of slightly ruined Fist of Fury for me. Because I watched Fist of Legend quite a few times before I watched Fist of Fury. And I spent the first 30 minutes of Fist of Fury going, nah, it's better in Fist of Legend. Nah, the way they did that was better in Fist of Legend. That dojo fight was much better in Fist of Legend. So it kind of ruined that slightly. And all round, it's just a much better film than Fist of Fury. Yeah, there's cracking action, and Yu Wu-Hing doing the action on it, and get Yasuaki Kurata in it, who's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. And then obviously it starts with Jet Li not looking like a total badass, but he does look pretty cool. And his black suit's just looking really icy as he snaps Japanese limbs all over the place, which is a great opening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good film. Unleashed I liked as well. And I like Ken, I actually prefer the title Unleashed.
That's good.
The film. A lot better. Yeah. Another one, what you just mentioned, Black Mask, is another one I'm particularly fond of as well.
Alright.
So I wasn't totally convinced when I watched that I'd enjoy it. A kind of wire-ish, undercranked, typical kind of new wavy thing, but yeah, I really enjoyed that film. It's good fun. And I liked Hitman as well. Now, I watched that a long time ago when I was kind of before I was really, really into Asian films. So I was kind of into them, but not as nerdy as I am now. And at that point, I kind of wanted just, you know, tons of action. I'd be sitting in a house when I was a student with a lot of buns and Rizzlers, wanting to see, like, awesome fight scenes and stuff. And didn't really get it in Hitman. But I still found myself really enjoying the film. I think it's probably the first case I saw Jet Li actually, you know, acting quite well. I thought his acting was pretty good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. It's not every day you get to see Jet Li and Simon Yam in a film.
Exactly.
Indeed.
And Eric Sang.
So I just was reminded of one of the AKAs for Hitman, because the title in America, Hitman, wasn't good enough. Wasn't punchy enough, I guess. Why not name it The Contract Killer?
So I thought it was going to be Legend of the Dragon Hitman or something.
Jet Li's the legend of the Dragon Lee's Killer the Hitman. Dragon the...
Hit Ninja. Punchy.
Punchy.
I think that's about it for Jet Li films that I really like, the three I mentioned there, basically. I haven't seen Fearless and Forbidden Kingdom yet, to be fair. And they both look pretty good. But the other films, I'm kind of... I like them. I quite enjoy them, but none of them really rock my world. Once Upon a Time in China... overly long, I felt. A bit boring. Martial Arts of Shaolin, big disappointment considering how much I love Shaw Brothers and Lau Kar-Lung films. Fong Sai Yuk's okay. It's quite amusing. The action's annoyingly white. Mm-hmm. Hero is Pap.
I don't know what that's one I can agree on, actually.
Beautiful Pap, Pap nonetheless. And Kiss of the Dragon, I'm not particularly fond of either. Bridget Fonda's whininess is annoyingly whiny.
It was almost like it was, you know, it is a whiny part. But it went over the limit. You know, past the border of, you know, acceptably whiny into too whiny.
So going to the director, so what are we looking for in this scene? I'm looking for you to be quite whiny. Okay. Much like yesterday, then. And last week. Yes, so I like Jet Li, but I'm not overall a massive fan of his films.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing I was thinking when it came to doing this episode, because thing is, he's not the biggest Hong Kong action star out there, but Hong Kong cinema wouldn't have been the same without him.
For a while, though, it was, you know, from my perspective, it was, you know, a craving for Jet Li films. And mm-hmm. I guess during the 90s, we had a really good streak of popularity, at least amongst fans. You know, whatever, you know, Jet Li is the ass kicker. And we got to see mm-hmm. every film he does. So,
and it's great when you see one of his movies for the first time. And realise you've got this big old back catalogue of other action films he's done. So what were you saying there before I rudely interrupted?
No, I've already forgotten, and you didn't rudely interrupt me.
Alright, so we've all discussed our favourites. Mike, commence the countdown.
Alright, Stu, start the music.
Yeah, sure.
So up to number 6. Once Upon a Time in China.
We done number 6.
We didn't, did we? We done number 7.
Ah, I done. Wait, sure do it again anyway. Do it again anyway. Save my ass.
Number 6. Stu's future father-in-law couldn't afford it. Once Upon a Time in China. Number five, Hero. It's Pat.
I beg to differ.
Beautiful. I know Scott's a fan of it.
I'm pretty sure I've saw it twice in cinema. But the second time was only really because Maggie Cheung was in that cinema as well.
Sounded like a stalker story right there. I knew where she was going to be that night. But that was an organized event, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Organized stalking event. There she is! Get her!
There was a line we weren't allowed to cross. I sat in front of it.
And creeped closer and closer and closer.
Where I've got the big t-shirt where it's a love heart shaped of her head. Where it's like got one eye cut out and her hair missing. I'm sitting there. And the t-shirt isn't even ironed. It's been lying there in the corner for weeks. Or it's never been off me. Oh, fuck.
It might all be true.
What monster am I creating? Right.
So Hero was... And the next one, Mike?
Number four! Kiss of the Dragon. Yeah. Right.
You both suck. It's awesome. Okay, Mike. Let's finish the countdown.
Start the music, Shu.
Yeah.
Number three. Unleashed. AKA Danny the Dog. Awesome.
That was a clip
Feel
from
pretty good.
A clip for the movie?
Yes. Couldn't afford more. You can only afford the art.
That's what they do for the TV edits when Jet Li swears. I'm going to ruff you.
Oh, and Bob Hoskins goes on his little rampages. They just put ARFs all over them.
Oh god.
And a little piece of dialogue about why is there a loud dog?
I just mind his sex scene and him acting like a walrus. Oh lord.
Danny the walrus.
I think that got a universal thumbs up from all three of us, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Number two, Fist of Legend.
All right. Yeah.
It's probably my favourite Jet Li film. Mhm. A clear winner is Fearless.
Rightfully so.
Now I call him Fock Yung Gap because that's how I kind of, you know.
Is that the Cantonese pronounce?
Yeah, that's how I first heard about him, and
yeah,
I saw him in films as Fock Yung Gap.
Yeah, it became kind of late in the game. I saw the English title becoming Fearless. I don't know if it was after Hong Kong or Asian release. So obviously, it sells as Fearless only if you buy it on Hong Kong DVD. But it became pretty much close to release. It became known under that title. Which is, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. It's only on screen for a few seconds, then the movie starts. Mm-hmm. So you can get it.
And I remember the American DVD getting this horrible cover art where it's sort of like he's coming down from the sky, it's got a red background, and it's just like him flying towards you with a sword screaming.
Yeah, it was horribly photoshopped, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That was a cinema poster. You know, that one on big billboards, presumably. Why not a classical, you know, stance like on the Hong Kong DVD or whatever? Just a mm-hmm. classical, very, you know, noble and good looking stance, if you will. Why wouldn't that fucking sell tickets? It's Jet Li.
Mm-hmm.
No, badly photoshopped with the limbs added and guns if they could have. They probably mm-hmm. could have. There probably were guns in that film.
A shotgun sticking out the back of his belt.
Scum belt.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's it.
So, do you have that movie on your pile, by the way, Mike? Fearless?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Okay.
I've actually a fan subbed version that I got when the film wasn't long ago at the cinema.
Man, you've still not seen it yet.
No.
It seems like at that time when you get a fan subversion, that's the thing you have to watch, just because that's the high point. That's like getting the copy of On Back to the Now with fan subs.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I didn't actually ask for it. Somebody just gave it to me, I think.
Oh, right, right.
Like, I did a trade, and it was just in some discs in the trade or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been lying around. I've been meaning to watch it, but I just haven't gone to it.
Is that the long or short version?
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, the longer version came out in a DVD release later on, I think.
Yeah, exactly. The longer version sounds like it was... the shorter version sounds like it was shorter for good reason.
Yeah, no, I didn't mind, actually, that length, to be honest. But I haven't never watched them side by side, so, you know.
Yeah.
So, to give it the benefit of the doubt, it probably isn't a hack job as a hacked-up job in its 20-minute shorter version or whatever. It probably plays very well, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think we have conquered this epic Jet Li episode. So, I've been your host for this evening.
Can I not plug?
I do apologise, Ken. That was missing for the script, so that is my fault. You have to plug.
Only if it's a Jet Li plug.
It actually is. Because when watching Shaolin Temple, or rather after watching Shaolin Temple, I went online to look and review four reviews and stuff. And I found a very lengthy piece on the film on the almost now abandoned Hong Kong Cinema View from the Brooklyn Bridge website, which was always good for reviews for obscure films. This guy, or actually a woman, I think, called Ives Gendron, wrote a very good piece on the Shaolin Temple, an essay, basically, and a movie review at the same time, talking about everything from the history of the Shaolin Temple, Wushu, the background of the movie, and the reception of the movie. And we're going to put up that link in the show post, because it's a very good essay, and it reminded me of the kind of retrospective essays you get with Criterion DVD releases. Often in the booklet you get these pieces that puts the movie in perspective and, you know, gets you into watching the movie if it's an important movie. And therefore, when thinking about it, I would argue, but it would never happen, that Shaolin Temple would be a good candidate for like a Criterion treatment, because it's important, and it could be a focus on the Shaolin Temple as part of the DVD release with supplements in that regard. But Criterion are not really known for releasing Chinese movies. They're more into Japan, presumably it sells more and it's more available for them. But this essay really it got me into watching the movie again, actually, because it really gave a good perspective on all things in the movie, including a critique of the action direction at times. So I'm going to link you up with that. And they even go to the lengths of talking about the opening theme song of the Shaolin Temple, which is very striking. The chorus opening credits song, which is even subtitled on DVD, so... The first two lines go, Shaolin, Shaolin, how many heroes adore you? How many stories mention you? It's kind of broken English, but anyway. Do read that, listeners. It's a very good piece.
All right. So, I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland.
Yeah.
Joining me this season, we've had Ken.
Kenneth Balls on heck.
And Mikey.
Yeah.
Right, so we'll catch you next time, eh?